This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Body Bags with Joseph Scott Moore. One of the most historic waterways in history is the Thames. And it's the way it's spelled is not the way it's pronounced. It's actually T-H-A-M-E-S. But it's the Thames. Sounds like a guy's name, Tim. The reason it's so historic is it has been a waterway that has been used since prior to Roman colonization in England. It goes back thousands of years. And just beneath the surface, there is all kinds of history that can be found there. Old pilings they have found where the Romans had constructed bridges. You can find broken old clay pipes out there. And every now and then, you'll find things like weapons and spoons and things that have just been tossed over. Just from the centuries of use. But every now and then, you'll come across something even more interesting in the Thames. Sometimes, you'll find broken people, perhaps, floating in the Thames. Today on Body Bags, that's what we're going to discuss. A person apparently so broken that they decided to throw themselves off of a bridge into the Thames, not to take their own life, but perhaps because they had taken the life of others. I'm Joseph Scott Morgan, and this is Body Bags. Dave, there was a time where in London, where you could not get near the Thames. It had such a foul odor, and
really?
a lot of it has to do with raw sewage that had poured in there and all these sorts of things.
Hold on, wait, Joe, before we get too far afoot here, I want to hear about the Thames and raw sewage, but today we're actually dealing with a murder mystery, a big time TV show and a winning contestant and an entrepreneur all rolled into one. And by the way, it all fits into this murder mystery that was revenge for a bad breakup. Not kidding. The victims, 14-year-old Inez Dibido and her 13-year-old best friend, Emilia Ferrero, and possibly another woman. We'll tell you about her in a little bit. But these two girls actually were given chocolate-covered raspberries as a treat. But when they ingested them, they ended up in the hospital. 4 days later, they died. They were poisoned with a colorless, tasteless, odorless poison called thallium. The murder of Inez Dibido, Emilia Ferrero. That's the episode today. And it's not fascinating. It's not a murder mystery. It's a murder in real life. It's disgusting and raw, much like the Thames was back in the day. But Joe, I know you've got incredible stories about Great Britain. I know you love it over there, but what do you find fascinating about the Thames?
One of the most fascinating things that I absolutely adore about the Thames is that if you travel along the river, you'll come to what would have been a little village at one point in time, but now it's all part of London, called Greenwich. And we've heard of Greenwich, Connecticut, right? Well, Greenwich is actually where Greenwich Mean Time comes from. It's literally where time starts. And I've been to the museum multiple times. They've actually got the original measurements for the imperial inch, the imperial foot, the imperial yard. And you can go into the museum, and this is quite fascinating to me. And if I'm not mistaken, they have the original rope that sailors used in order to measure knots. You know how we use miles per hour, kilometers per hour? Well, you know, for sailors, they use knots, you know, how fast something is going in a vessel in the water. Fascinating place. There's this gigantic red ball there, and it's all dented up. Interestingly enough, because during one of the wars, a bunch of the people that occupied that space up there tried to use this thing as a soccer ball. And the thing is gigantic. It's metallic, and they started knocking it about. Now it's kind of sealed off, and it's got dents in it and everything. But for years and years, they have these clocks that are there at this museum, and or actually the spot where time is established. And they're set so that when it gets to the top of the hour, say at noon, this ball would ascend into the air, okay? And all of the ships on the Thames, which went all around the world, would send up signals to indicate what the time of day was. It's before we had the ability to even have telegraph to send out messages like this. And people would go back because, you know, you can go to a variety of different areas all over the world, and time is different everywhere you go, right? So you never know what you're going to find in the Thames. The reason I'm telling you all of this about this area is that in today's episode, we're actually going to be talking about a woman who apparently fled to Great Britain, and when she arrived, seemingly she felt like she had literally arrived at the end of her rope, I guess, and threw herself into the Thames. She was found, and she is still alive, but Dave, she's facing some very serious charges.
Yeah, it's amazing that the headline of the story is Shark Tank contestant. When you see the headline Shark Tank contestant, you're thinking, yeah, hey, I probably know who this is. I might have seen them on a commercial, a promo, or on the show. I don't even know if the show's still on. But if you're in the U.S. and you see that, you know, problem is this is not in the U.S. because that's the first thing I did. All right, where was this? You know, because they have TV shows around the world, and yeah, you know, they have. It's shocking to some when you go to another country and you go, hey, wait a minute, that show's Big Bang Theory, but I don't understand what these people are saying because they're speaking, you know, a different language. Yeah, it happens. And Shark Tank is no different. The woman we're talking about here, who is actually accused of attempted murder and murder at this point, was on Shark Tank Colombia.
Hey,
South America. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Zulma Guzman Castro. Zulma Guzman Castro. That's her name. She is in her mid-50s. Going to be polite. Yeah. I don't know why I should be. But apparently, she used chocolate-covered raspberries to poison, on purpose, another human being. And it worked, Joe. She did poison another human being. Actually, two human beings. A 14-year-old girl, Inez de Debo, who was 14, and Amelia Ferrero, 13. These two little girls ate chocolate raspberries and died, Joe. Now, I don't know what kind of evil you are to take chocolate and raspberries and use those as a delivery for death.
Yeah, I don't either, because we're just, you know, Christmas is in our rearview mirror, and my family, one of our family members actually sends Kimmy and I a package from David's. Have you ever heard of David's? They mm-hmm. do like yeah. moose tracks and all that sort yeah. of stuff. And contained therein are these.
Has my name, but something I can't afford. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I couldn't afford it either. But they've got these, they're raspberry, I think, or maybe cherry. I'm not sure. But they look like hard candy, but they're not. And contained inside is like chocolate. Well, mouse watering right now, as a matter of fact. And they look so delicious. And listen, talking about London, I went to, if you ever get a chance, you need to go to Harrods when you're over there, because they have got a candy section that is just unbelievable. And it's all handmade, dude. And they had chocolate covered cherries there, all manner of different kinds of chocolate covered fruit. And think about these kids. Is there anything more tempting to a child?
Child.
You know, and that, that, oh, I see what you did there. I'll make sure to put some out when you come over. Okay.
No, it ain't happening. I am never eating anything that I don't make myself I am seriously considering everything.
This is terrifying. I mean, it really is, you know, because the thing about poisoning, Dave, is that it is targeted, but yet it is in its own way, it's non-specific, because you don't know who's going to pick something up. Mm-hmm. I mean, you really don't. It seems as though that we've just recently covered a case about poisoned wine, I believe, didn't we?
Yes, we did.
Yeah. And so you don't know who's going to pick up a bottle that you've laced it. Think about the Tylenol murders that took place all those years ago. And that's a randomized kind of thing. Yeah. It's not like, you know, you hear those old spy stories where people would, you know, the guy with the, God, I can't remember the details. It's Soviet bloc, came up with the umbrella, and it had the little radioactive ball, and he injected it into the guy's skin, you know, with the umbrella. Now, that's targeted. You're going specifically for them. But you put out a plate of something? My Lord in heaven, that's horrible stuff, man.
Well, the saddest reality here is that this actually, Joe, is another story that begins with an interpersonal romantic relationship that ended after 6 years. And our suspect, she has not been convicted. She is still a suspect. She is actually accused of taking out her anger on her former lover, boyfriend, whatever you are when you're that age. I don't know. That her motive was to get revenge for him breaking up with her after 6 years. And I'm thinking, if he broke up with her after 6 years, Joe, and this is her response, don't you think he saw a few things over the last 6 years that kind of tipped him off that maybe she wasn't as balanced as she might appear when she's on TV Shark Tank trying to win a contest?
Yeah, I mean, precisely. And, you know, you try to take the measure of it, and you wonder if there was anything this egregious that was on his, I mean, one part of me is hoping no, because if this is something that is on your radar and you don't react to it or, you know, identify it, if you're still going to allow children to be around this person, that's very sinister. It's very, very dark, man.
You know something else that hit me? What's that? I apologize for not. Okay, you know, we've been dealing with the Tepe murders up in Ohio.
Yeah.
And where Monique and Spencer are allegedly murdered by Monique's ex-husband. Now, Spencer and Monique have been married for 5 years, and Monique had been divorced from Dr. McKee for, you know, 3 years before she got remarried. So they've been apart for 8 years, right?
Yeah.
Joe, in this case, the suspect here was involved in a 6-year relationship that ended in 2020. And she just tried to do this. They've been broken up for 5 years. They've been broken up nearly as long as they dated. When they broke up, this little girl that died was 9. The other was only 8 when they broke up. Think about that for a minute. And what kind of simmering evil is there, allegedly, that would cause somebody to bring about this kind of pain on somebody 5 years after they ended a dating relationship?
Yeah, the only way, it's pure evil, and it's ghoulish on one level, because what I think that, you know, you begin to think about this from the perspective of your hurt feelings or your jealousy or whatever it is, that is more important than the lives of these people these youngsters that have been exposed to this toxin. And it, and Dave, this is something that would have taken a significant amount of work in order to facilitate this. First off, you have to determine what your delivery method is going to be. And then you have to know how to handle the stuff. And then how are you going to get the agent into this system, not just the system of the victims, but can you sufficiently get it into these chocolate covered raspberries? I don't know, but I do know this. What she wound up giving these children that wound up in her, in their deaths, and another victim who was 21 years old, actually goes by the name of the poisoner's poison. Out of all the substances that this perpetrator, alleged perpetrator, might choose, she actually chose one of the single most poisonous substances known to man. And it's naturally occurring.
Oh my gosh, Joe.
Yeah.
You got, wait a minute. A little while ago when Joe was telling me about this particular poison, and he said it's the poisoner's poison, that got my attention. But when you tell me it's naturally occurring, like I could go find this somewhere and just obtain it and keep it.
Yeah. Yeah. You could, if you were of a mind, and I think I have to ask, and I don't know what the rules and regulations are in Colombia.
Right? Yeah.
But you know, here, okay, let me see. Let me get this right. We used to use the substance. I'll give you the name in a second. We used to use this substance in the U.S. for pesticide, and they actually refer to it as rodenticide, which is for rats and mice. We stopped allowing companies to use it in 1972. Now, just think back. You know, 1972, it was the last of it was manufactured in the U.S. in 1984. We knew back then how dangerous it was. And after we identified it, at that point in time, other countries followed suit. They began to remove it. And this poison, which is known as thallium, it's got a myriad of uses. It's actually used, interestingly enough, in nuclear medicine. You begin to think about, imaging devices, these sorts of things. It's been used in that way. It's used in, I think it might be, is it used in semiconductors? I'm not really sure. I know that it's used, in manufacturing of certain electronic devices, I believe. It's not used like other agents as a solvent, though, like as a cleaner, you'll find it. So it's very, very specific. Here's another factoid with it. It's got what they call a very narrow therapeutic spectrum, which means as an element, does it have any utility in treatment as a medicine? And one of the few things that it had been used with in the past was treatment of ringworm. And they were like, I think we'll find another way to treat ringworm other than applying thallium, because I can only imagine they probably had cases, and they've known about the toxicity for some time. It has to be very controlled, but this stuff is odorless. It's tasteless. When prepared, it's clear. So I think that part of this kind of name that's been hung on it as the poisoner's poison, it goes to that. It's very, very stealthy. There's no way that you're going to be able to pick up on it. But buddy, let me tell you something. The symptomology with this, when it is applied to an individual, It is a brutal, brutal death, Dave.
All right, now, because of the way we've been talking about it, that it would be delivered via chocolate-covered raspberries, I assumed it was something that you would maybe bite in the chocolate and it would be dusting on the raspberries, you know, and that you would lick or something along the, but you would ingest it that way.
It could be injected into the raspberry itself. So we don't know at this point, but right. Yeah, I mean, I see your point here.
Wow. All right. So you've got, how would you discover that's what killed him? I mean, because if you get poisoned by something like that, okay, that you have no idea, you go to the hospital or you take your child or whoever, you take them to the hospital because they're going to get sick. What symptoms are they going to show?
Well, some of the symptoms they're going to show, it's got a lot of neurological problems that arise with it. You'll see things like seizures, tremendous headaches, tremors, inability to talk, like dysphonia almost. And you can also see signs, lesions on skin as well. Ataxia, you know, which is where you don't have control over your motor functions. There's like a gait abnormality, you know, when you're trying to walk along. So it's really attacking your neuromuscular system. Here's an issue with this is that if it's attacking your brain and your central nervous system that way, well, what controls the rhythm of your heart? Okay. So as a consequence of this, you run the risk of having some kind of cardiac event along with this. So it's a very slippery slope. And to be able to treat someone, first off, you'd have to recognize the symptomology. And you might have somebody that, I don't know, they could present, I guess. And if they have dysphonia or ataxia, whatever the case might be, you might look at them and say, oh, okay, this person's having a stroke. But dude, when you've got a 13 and a 14 year old that roll in tandem, assuming they rolled in tandem, unless they died there at the scene, and this is still kind of unclear at this point. Hopefully we can, you know, maybe clarify that. But you're thinking, okay, this is not someone that's having a stroke, you know, at these ages. How are they presenting at that point in time? And then once this occurs, you have to flush the system. You have to flush the system immediately. In the acute sense, you're going to administer something that will probably coat the stomach, induce vomiting, all these sorts of things, if you can get it out of the system. And the course for recovery for this, if you survive, is long, long, long.
Holy moly.
If they can catch it in time. Yeah.
Well, you know, something else that came out of this, okay, we're talking about, this is, okay, the 6-year relationship, that, or 5-year, you know, 6-year relationship that was going on, and the man who was involved in the relationship with Zulma Guzman Castro, he was married at the time they were in their relationship, and he broke off the relationship with her, and a year later, his wife died of cancer. They suspect, they being law enforcement, now suspect that she was poisoned with thallium twice before she died, a year after he broke up with Castro. I mean, Joe, it's so deep here that.
Well, yeah. Well, it is. I got to tell you something, because this is a revelation to me, Dave. Thallium is a heavy metal, you know, like lead. It followed mercury. It falls into arsenic. That classification. Yeah, arsenic. The thing about thallium and heavy metals, guess what? You can actually exhume bodies and you can find evidence of exposure.
Holy moly.
I wonder if they're going to go down that road with the wife that had passed. because she's not, she wouldn't just be looking at two counts of homicide. If they can put her adjacent to this poor woman, and what did they think her original cause of death was?
Cancer. They said she died of cancer in August of 2021.
I wonder how that diagnosis was made. I'm not trying to be a jerk by saying that, but I'm just wondering, because here's the thing. You know how I mentioned poisoner's poison? Yeah. If you've got someone that's already debilitated with cancer, think how easy it would be to push them over the edge with thallium. And you would just look at this death and say, oh, yeah, well, she had cancer and she succumbed. And guess what would not have been done? An autopsy at that particular time. They would have said, okay, she had the big C. She's gone on to her reward. And they would bury her. Hopefully they didn't cremate her. But if you could go back and collect samples, you know, that was one of the things, like, I think it was, I know I'll get this wrong, but bear with me. They had samples of Napoleon's hair, and they thought that he had been poisoned. I don't know if it was mercury or lead, and they were checking those hair samples for him, because you can actually find... You can find elements, you know, it's not like that's naturally occurring, that it would be in the hair. Hair is generally where they're going to go for this, to see if they can source it out at that particular time. The only problem is that that's kind of a qualifying finding. It's not a quantitative finding. So I don't know that you could ever get to the point where you would say, okay, this was a lethal dose, but even more so thallium. I mean, you can't find it anymore. It's out there. Obviously she allegedly found it, but it's not like it's floating around out there everywhere. If you found thallium in this wife's system, boy, that's a stake through her heart, legally speaking. So just to catch you up to speed, with these victims, Brother Dave, they were taken to the hospital. They were taken to the hospital, and these two little girls, 13 and 14, lived for 4 days.
Unbelievable.
And I'm using the term lived, but that ain't living. It would have been an excruciating, miserable existence. I find it interesting that they both lived for 4 days and died. You know, I think treatment-wise, that gives you an indication. And I really wonder how long it took the medical personnel to make that assessment. You know, say, okay, we're dealing with thallium now. But if you're talking about 4 days, your system, it's not like it's just kind of sitting there in your stomach. Now, this thing's been... It's been uptaken into, it's been metabolized. So now this stuff's going through your body. You're past the acute phase at this point. Major problem here.
Now it makes more sense that there was, because earlier when I was looking at this and it said that there are two other people, we have the two dead girls, the 14 and 13 year old. That's sad enough. Okay. But then there's another girl who also was poisoned. It said she suffered life-changing injuries, and there was a 21-year-old older brother was also a victim who was hospitalized, but he survived. But I'm looking at that thing. I was thinking life-changing injuries. Okay, yeah. I know poisons do all kinds of things, but
right,
they lived 4 days. What in the world did this other girl get? Maybe she didn't have as much.
I'm telling you, I can tell you, I'll bet you dollars to donuts, it's going to be some kind of life-changing neurological deficit she's going to have to live with. And it can come in any number of ways. I actually think that a substance like this could, in fact, impair your sight. Perhaps it could certainly impair your motor skills. And they're saying, you know, like her life is taking a different course at this point. We're no longer on the track that we were prior to ingestion of the stuff. I would imagine that the 21-year-old that survived, he was able to fill in the blanks quite a bit because this is, you know, this is a medical investigation at this point, Tom. I mean, it truly is. You know, most folks, that's why I love working with nurses. Nurses, what they do and what doctors do to a certain extent, but certainly nurses, they are investigators. That's what they have to do because they're having to drag information out of people. Sometimes people don't speak very well. Some people are not reticent to give information because it's so personal. And sometimes just symptomology, you know, they have to work through a problem because it's not all cookie cutter. It's not cookie cutter medicine. And particularly when you start to talk about some kind of exotic poison like this and, you know, kind of work your way through it. I wonder if this alleged perpetrator, as her plane is lifting off to take her somewhere safe, I wonder if she had this in her rearview mirror. I wonder how much of an awareness she had, Dave, that of what she had done. You know, what kind of, it's fascinating because the guy who is supposedly identified as a person that's bringing all of this trouble into her life, he's not physically impacted by this. It's these other folks.
Mm-hmm. You know, Joe, when we were talking about this before we started, and I know nothing about thallium, okay?
Yeah.
It's something I'd heard of before, and now I'm trying to remember where I heard it because I'm a little concerned over who might have said it and whether or not,
naturally occurring.
Yes, I'm thinking naturally. Yeah. I mean, to me, I'm thinking I'm making notes here. You know, it's kind of like people watching Breaking Bad to learn how to make meth, you know? That's not what we're doing here. It's like, but this thallium, to think about something that is naturally occurring, that is the poisoner's poison.
Yeah.
It really is taking this down a path I never expected to go. It reminds me of the mushroom cap lady in Australia and the other poisonings we've had recently where people have gone down this path, and the death through poison is a god awful experience.
Yeah. And each particular type of poison brings about its own terror. Okay. Because certain things are going to impact you. Even going back to Anjette Lyles, you know, when she had poisoned her daughter, with the Andro ant poisoning. And at one of her husbands, she poisoned as well. Do you know they had to strap their arms down to the bed so that they wouldn't rake the skin off of their body? Because it impacted their skin so badly. And you never know how this stuff's going to manifest. But yeah, the history of it is absolutely, you know, just positively horrific.
Here's some of the things that we need to know about our suspect here too, Joe. I was looking at when she was on Shark Tank in Colombia, because we've got the relationship with the married guy going for 5 years, ending in 2020, and then his wife dying within a year. And they think that she was poisoned twice with thallium during that time. But it was in 2021 that Castro ends up on Shark Tank in Colombia. She's an entrepreneur, business person, okay? There's a electric car sharing thing in Colombia that she's behind. Yeah. And I mean, she's well thought of in the business community, apparently. I assume she was a chef, owned a cafe or something. You know, that's what I assumed when we started this whole thing. And now we find out that, you know, she would have been on Shark Tank at the time she was poisoning her ex-boyfriend's wife. Think about that.
I wonder how long she's been involved with electric cars.
Thallium.
I'm wondering. I really, you know, now that you say that, you know, I know that lithium batteries are used, you know, in those things, I'm assuming. But I really wonder because, you know, thallium is used, first off, in medicine relative to nuclear medicine, and then it's used also in optics, like lenses and things like that, but it's also used in electronics. Now, that's a fascinating sourcing possibility. Now, I'm wondering, you know, if she's that involved in it. I mean, man, she went on Shark Tank, okay? Yeah. Not that that's the measure for everything, no. But I'm just saying, you know, I wonder if she is only on the front end of this relative to, you know, like we're going to provide these cars so that people can travel. I'm more interested in how it works, the system works. Or does it go back to a manufacturing phase where she's around people where she could access this stuff?
Well, we do know that she was or is smart enough to be able to get away from her nation, to get away from Interpol. She's able to get away from everybody except the Thames. And I'm going to be honest with you. If you spell something T-H-A-M-E-S and you call it Tim, there's something wrong with you. You know, that's not the right way. You don't spell Thames that way.
I heard somebody
call it the Thames one time, and I went, I know you're wrong, but I don't want to correct you.
Yeah, and it's a common mistake. But, yeah, she was evading Interpol, and I'm always amazed. You know, I'm thinking Jason Bourne here, you know, where you can look across, which I love the whole Bourne series. But, you know, she went from Colombia back in the 13th of April, 2025. She went from there to Argentina. From Argentina, she went to Brazil. From Brazil, she landed in Spain. And that's how she made her way to the UK. And the entire time, she is evading Interpol.
Right.
And I'm sure that there are, you know, it's not just Interpol itself. You know, they send out, I don't know if you've ever seen an Interpol bulletin, but they'll send it out to other, the Spanish government. Their law enforcement wing would have this in addition to it being on Interpol's radar. They have, and just the fact that they've gotten Interpol engaged in this thing, the all-seeing eye, is gives you an idea of how dangerous they think that she is. Because she's, you know, potentially, I'll go ahead and say it. She's potentially a mass murderer, and is she carrying this stuff with her? Did she get rid of it? I have no idea, but I'm fascinated by the fact that she evaded for so long and traveled internationally through all of these various ports of call, if you will, until she's, you know, found there floating in in the Thames. And I think that it was like a lifeboat service or something that saw her. And you'll see these boats just like screaming, you know, up and down the Thames, and you can take high speed boat rides and all these sorts of things. But, you know, she's found there. The question is, did she do this in order to take her life, or did she do this to maybe feign some kind of mental illness? I think that she was actually put into, if I'm not mistaken, I think she was actually put into some kind of treatment facility initially, wasn't she, Dave?
Yeah. Well, I was thinking they did that because you'd have to be insane or on drugs to jump into the Thames at 6:45 in the morning on it, you know, in December.
And, brutal. I mean, just absolutely. You know, you're not going to have a bunch of snow laying on the ground in London, but it is cold. I've been as cold in London as I've been anywhere in my life. And there's always a chill in that river, though I've never gone swimming in it, and I don't plan on it, always looks like it would be absolutely frigid. But here we are. Here we are. And now she is going to be held to account for what she has done. Are they going to be able to prove either guilt or innocence? I don't know, but the path, the wake, if you will, that she has left behind has far extended beyond the banks of the Thames River in London. I'm Joseph Scott Morgan, and this is Body Bags.
This is an iHeart podcast, guaranteed human.